Welcome to the Unscripted Podcast. My name is Corby LaCroix, and the song you're hearing right now is called Great and Mighty One, available on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your music. But for now, here's your host and my friend, Aaron Conrad.
Great Redeemer, God of grace.
Come receive. All right, everybody, welcome back to Unscripted from my studios in Old Hilliard. Exciting day today. Again, I'm just blessed with every guest, but today's guest, Justin Kendrick, is a co-founder of and lead pastor of Vox Church in New Haven, Connecticut, launched in 2011 with a mission to see New England transformed from the least churched region in the U.S. to the most spiritually vibrant place on earth. The church is initially planted near Yale University and now has 9 campuses throughout the Northeast. Kendrick is a husband and father of 4 children, and he's also the author of a book called Bury Your Ordinary, Practical Habits of a Heart Fully Alive. And we're going to talk about another book today called The Sacred Us. So welcome.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Absolutely. Anything else that I missed there from your bio?
That was quite the intro. No, you basically covered it. I have a golden retriever named Winnie. Wasn't in there. Okay. But other than that, yeah.
Well, I really want to, we're going to get into the book a lot because I love this topic. When it was sent to me, I just think it's so timely for everything. And we'll get into that a little bit. But let's talk about the most unchurched place in the region. I know I live in Columbus, Ohio, and yeah. It is very unchurched as well. Yes. I think it's changing a bit, but, you know, and I think I could probably say about a lot of places, but you went really right to the heart of it with that mission. So could you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, New England, I mean, of course, reaching people with the gospel is rarely, easy and streamlined, right? It's usually clumsy, challenging, difficult. And just a few months ago, I was in Arizona and I was at a church and they were praying for the 48% of people who don't regularly attend church in Arizona. And I almost fell out my chair. I was sitting next to my wife and I thought, wow, that means 52% of the people in this region do attend church regularly, right. Which in my cities, that number is about 2% that do attend church regularly. So
2%?
2%. Yeah. Thanks to George Barna and the Barna Research Group. They rank our region of the 10 least churched places in America. I think New England's got 9 of them. So we are right in the midst. And so you've got New Haven and Hartford and Boston and Bridgeport and Providence and Worcester. So when we started our church 11 years ago, and I'm from this area and spent, years trying to leave, and felt a really clear and specific call from Jesus to stay and to invest and to start churches and to reach people with the gospel. And it's been 11 years of miracles, of miraculous, wow, supernatural interventions from God that has allowed a very beautiful community to form and grow and spread. And so, we're in 6 of the 10 largest New England cities now with our services. And then we have 3 other locations that are not in urban centers, but right outside cities. And there's been a real grace on what we are doing, and we're excited for what's ahead.
I mean, there has to be just simple math. Most people know I'm not that bright, but 2%. 2%, and you have 9 campuses. That's like, how did that develop, knowing that you're up against 2%? Like, how did you make that math work?
Yeah, it doesn't work. People need to meet Jesus. That's the bottom line, is right. Right. The majority of your church are going to be people who don't have a church background, don't have a Bible background. A lot of this area would identify as Catholic, but doesn't ever attend church. You know, they don't ever actually attend any service or participate in any religious events. They're just kind of culturally Catholic in their own minds. You know, and so. That's a lot of the population we're dealing with. And so when people are walking into church at Vox, at our home church, oftentimes it's the very first time they've been in a church, and it's the very first time that they're hearing the gospel. And so I am talking about Jesus, and every week I'm talking to someone who's literally never heard that he died for my sins and rose from the dead, and I can receive forgiveness and grace. So that's crazy. To me, it is so much fun. It never gets old to watch the lights come on and watch people experience the kindness of God through Christ in a personal encounter. It's awesome. It's awesome. And so, yeah, it's, you know, the math definitely doesn't work, but there's something contagious happening. You know, yeah. I think about, he's a friend now, a friend of mine named Javier, who met God in a life-changing way 3 years ago. His wife, his two kids, his mom, his brother's wife, his cousin. Now they're all a part of the church, part of the family of God, because something is happening in their home that's changing their lives.
Awesome. And I was going to ask you, because it sounds like, you know, with that percentage, I was just wondering if you've had to, this isn't probably the right word, unprogram or deprogram mm-hmm. someone's misunderstanding or poor, maybe a poor experience in faith prior, but it sounds like that's not what you're dealing with. You're dealing with people that have, which in the United States is incredible that people have never heard the gospel. That's insane.
I know. I mean, it really, you know, especially I spend a little bit of time in the Bible Belt and the culture shock is so, significant when you spend most of your life in New England, and people don't even think about it or realize it until you're here for a while. And then you start having conversations and it's like, wow, this is real. These people are really this ignorant to the Bible. You'd think in America, you know, but it is not a part of their lives. There's two sides of it. One side is very exciting because I look at it like wet cement. You are literally introducing people to the Bible for the first time in their lives, which is so much fun and very exciting. You know, that's one side. The other side is you're not dealing with a lot of the muscle memory and built-in things. So like you talk about giving, you talk about worship. Like last week at our church, I had to really explain that like worship is not like a karaoke, 20 minutes of karaoke. Like we're actually a priesthood and we're offering a sacrifice to God and like just creating a theology around worship that there's just no grid for at all. And so it is fun because you're helping shape a worldview in the hearts and minds of people. But it also comes with a, you know, significant amount of challenge. And sometimes you wish, boy, it'd be great to not start from the ground up with everybody. And we don't always have to. You get some transports. Oh, we came here from Florida. And it's like, oh, good. You probably know how to give and how to serve and how to, you know, some of the basics. But a lot of it, it's from you know, starting place.
And that's absolutely fascinating. And it does lead into your book, I think. Yeah. But one point that I want to make there too is with 2%, when they leave on Sunday, they're not surrounded probably in their working space. You know, like you said, I live in Ohio. I mean, most, you know, somebody you work with is probably a Christian or goes to church. Yeah. You might even go to church with them. But those people are going back to their places of work and whatever they do during the week, and they're not surrounded by community. How's that been?
Yeah, that's real for our students. That's real for our general population, right? Like my boys, I have three sons and a daughter, and my daughter's three, but my boys are high school, middle school, elementary school. And, you know, they each have, well, it's changing now because a number of their friends are actually starting to come to our church, which is exciting. But before that, they really have zero Christian friends at their public school, you know? And so whatever it might be, 1,000 kids at the school, they don't know another Christian. And now as some of them are meeting Jesus at our church. And so now some of their friends are actually followers of Christ, which is awesome. But yeah, it's definitely a challenge. You know, and, it's also, again, there's always that two sides, right? It's also a really sweet opportunity.
Right.
And it does allow for a lot of, powerful moments and conversations. Like we've had a lot of friends who have actually left Connecticut in the last few years just because of the challenges of the public schools, you know, and some of the things that they're pressing down people's throats and everything else. And I get that. And I understand that tension, but I'm also like, hey, can we send some missionaries into those public schools too? You know, can we have a few of our sons and daughters who actually have a foundation in Jesus and can compellingly, winsomely show Jesus to these people? And so, it's an incredible opportunity. It really is.
Well, and thank you for taking the time to do that. I know we came on to talk about the book, but I think that's helpful. I think for people, even myself included, welcome to Unscripted, to understand the landscape with which you're working and writing this book. So can we transition to the book? Because I think that it does now make sense even more so. Do you want to talk a little bit about the book?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, this book is not like last year I was like, hey, I have an idea. Let's write a book on community. Like, that's fine. You know, I'm not criticizing anyone else's process when it comes to writing. But for me, this is a, you know, it's a 30-year book. I just turned 40. And so, you know, well, I guess 25 years, you would say, because as a young teenager, I met Jesus and I became fascinated at a young age, high school, with the stories of the Bible, how Jesus took 12 guys and did life with them every day and just lived life in this dynamic community. And of course, in our time, church has often become this sort of institutional tradition that we show up on Sunday for X amount of hours or time or minutes. We exit, we go to our normal lives, and then we show up again. And the Bible teaches a much more holistic idea about community, that we are the people of God and that our lives should actually be woven and knit together. And it doesn't mean that everybody has to live necessarily in a Christian commune, but right. It does mean that, you know, seeing them for 60 minutes or 90 minutes or whatever it is on a Sunday and then being completely disconnected for the other 6 days is not a biblical model of community at all. And so this started for me in college. I led one guy to Christ at my university, and we moved in as roommates. We added two more. By my senior year, I was living with 9 guys in a 2-bedroom apartment, all new followers of Jesus. It was crazy town. And then 2 weeks after graduation, I married my wife and we bought a multifamily house. And we ended up inviting people that we had led to Christ or that were followers of Jesus into this home. We had 8 of us living in this multifamily house. Our best friends bought a house about a block away. They had 9 people in their house. When we started the church, we bought a second house. They bought a second house. Long story short, we had in a 3 or 4 block radius, 12 or 13 houses together. And we were literally living out community every day, figuring out how do we do life together? How do we raise kids together? Now, this wasn't on some like backwoods in Utah. This was in the urban center in New Haven, a city that's built primarily around Yale University and Yale New Haven Hospital, and a very urban environment, you know, that we now had this little community. We jokingly used to call it the cul-de-sac because people thought we were crazy and you know, thought that we were doing something strange, but we were following the Bible, loving Jesus, and we weren't this closed community. It wasn't legalistic. No one, you know, we weren't operating off of one purse. Everybody owned their own homes or rented or whatever. But we were intentional about our geography to do life together. And that was where the church was founded. And it was out of that that we eventually started moving out of New Haven to plant more churches and send little pockets of people. And so now we've had 9 come out of that. And they're continuing to start their own little pockets in Hartford and in Springfield and in Worcester right now. And so the point of all that is to say that during that process, we realized that church was never supposed to be a Sunday experience for a short window. It was supposed to be a holistic way of doing life with others. And so how do we help people who maybe aren't going to move into a Christian commune live this? And this, you know, this evolved into what we talk about as our 7 principles of community. And that's what the book's about. The book is about these 7 principles and how they can be applied to any Christian context and really deepen and enrich something beyond an institution and really into a movement and into a family.
I love that. You've lived this. Like, you've literally lived
this. Still living it.
That's so cool. And cul-de-sac is maybe one of the funniest things I've ever heard. I love that. What an incredible story. And I think, you know, I think the thing for me when I look at it too, my wife and I have this conversation all the time. You have kids. I think our community too can be, I know, you know, ours were all involved in travel sports. And so we were with the same parents every weekend, 3 times a week, sometimes in a gym, in a pool, in a baseball field, in a basketball court, you know, but it was the same people. And we were doing life together, but not necessarily in the Christian context. So I don't know if you cover that in the book, but what are your thoughts on that? Because I think that's still community. If anything, it's our place to maybe be the gospel, be the hands and feet, be Jesus to a community that may not know him. And we are in each other's lives constantly. Does that make sense?
Oh, big time. Yeah. I think, you know, I do think that I have 2 thoughts around that. One is I think it's probably the greatest opportunity for gospel connection with those far from God that any parent can have. You know, my boys all play sports, and the number of conversations on the soccer field and basketball gym that I've had just about life with right. parents has right. been beautiful. And so I think if you have kids in that age range, leaning into that as a community is huge, especially we always say that hospitality is the new evangelism, you know? And so right. like, we're living in a time where people don't want to be sold. They just want to be loved. And so, and so we say, well, then leverage hospitality. In other words, hey, bring the cookies, invite people over for a pool party at your house after the soccer game. Just be hospitable. And in doing so, God opens up doors for you to genuinely share the love of Christ. And so I do think Christians should think less about handing out tracts and more about inviting people over for dinner. And so as we do that, it's transformative. And I think that actual travel sports is a huge opportunity. The other, I would say the dark side of that is that, you know, people need community and they're going to get it somewhere. And if the church is just this machine that doesn't know how to produce genuine relationship, then they're all going to go to the soccer club and they're going to get it there. And so for me, I think this is a real indictment on the church that people feel more comfortable on the sidelines with other parents than they do in the pews with other people. And so I think we have to learn from the soccer clubs about how to build community again in the church.
Hey everyone, my name is Cami Pranel and I'm the executive director for My Unscripted. We hope you are enjoying today's interview. My Unscripted is dedicated to helping others find their voice, passion, and follow their dreams. Our team can help create websites, apps, YouTube channels, podcasts, media, and social content. Whatever your passion and vision, we can help. Our good friend Manny Ahomey of Samaritan's Feet once said, make sure your dreams and goals are big enough to create room for others to join you. We've created room for you to join us too. Find out more at myunscripted.com. Now let's join Aaron for the second half of today's interview.
The next thing I want to ask, when it comes to, we just came through the pandemic and the pandemic closed a lot of churches' doors, unfortunately pulling us away from community. We could not literally be together except for our families, you know. I know even our local church, I swear every Sunday they're like, hey, come on back, you know, because there was great things in terms of it opened up technology. So churches that weren't streaming before are now streaming, which is awesome. Reaching entirely new pockets. Wonderful. But I know most of those churches are wanting people to come back. And I think this fed into when I saw this as well. Would you agree that that's kind of where we are? And I think this book probably helps, you know, maybe talk about that a little bit, as we need to get back together again.
Yeah, I think, you know, there is an institutional side of church that I think there's a reckoning happening, right? And so if I just want people back in a building to pad my ego or meet my budget, right. Well, then that's a deeper problem.
Absolutely.
Right?
100%.
But I think that the church as a whole, one thing that's been exposed is that we actually don't have a theology around the gathering. And so the book actually talks a lot about that, is that, hey, biblically, there's a very robust theology around the gathered people. Mm. But in our time, we've been drinking from the fire hose of individuality and autonomy for the last 200 years in American culture. So everything says you're an individual, right? You're an autonomous self. You don't need other people. Self-fulfillment is discovered by self-actualization, by reaching your goals, by meeting your needs, by enhancing your comfort, right? So that's sort of the air we breathe. That's the water we're swimming in our culture. And what it's produced, by the way, right, is people who are, I talk about in the book, friendly but friendless, right? So we all, you might be nice to each other, but you don't have five people that you'd call if you were dying of cancer, you know? And so, we our relationships are an inch deep, you know? Yeah. And so there is this kind of moment right now where the church has the opportunity to step in and teach a different way of doing relationship. And so when we talk about the theology of us, what we're really saying is, why do we gather as a people? And I think that most Americans think we're gathering for information transfer, right? And they think to themselves, well, if I'm just getting information, I can do that online, right? Like I can listen to a podcast and then sing songs in my car. So what do I need church for, right? But what we have to understand is that the Bible is very clear that the opportunity to know God, that is available to us in the gathering is not available to us as individuals, right? So for example, in 1 Peter 2, Peter says that we are living stones being built into a spiritual house, which is a temple, right? Now, what he's saying there is that when we come together, when we gather, we actually form the temple of God. And the temple of God was the place where God brought his profound glory, right? The glory of God was always marking the temple of God. And so there's an experience with God, an encounter with God that only happens in the participation of the gathering. And so, yes, we've talked for so long in America about a personal relationship with Jesus. That's fine, but just so you know, right, that's not actually in the Bible anywhere, wow. Right? That phrase, a personal relationship with Jesus, it's not in the Bible anywhere because the entire Sermon on the Mount was written in the plural. You know, we read it as Americans, and in English it says, you are the light of the world. But in the Greek, it says, you guys or y'all are the light of the world. Right? It's a plural statement. In other words, he's saying, together you make up the temple. Together you make up. And so there's something that happens in the gathering, the participation of worship, the participation of receiving the sermon that actually changes us in a way that we cannot experience in our bedroom by ourselves. Yes, have a personal relationship with Jesus, but the body of Christ, again, another illustration that the New Testament uses, tells us that if I'm a hand and I get cut off, it's grotesque, not beautiful, right? And so in the same way, if I'm trying to live the Christian life apart from Christians, I'm actually creating something that's deformed.
Wow.
And so, there's an entire theology around this that I give the second and third chapter to that I think we've lost. And that's why so many of us, 1 in 3 right now, are going, I don't need to go to church, right? I don't need to go to church. I have a personal relationship with Jesus. I like to sing, you know, Elevation Worship or Hillsong, whatever music I like in my car. And I listen to 3 or 4 great teachers on a podcast. I'm good. And I would say you're missing something fundamental.
Wow. And there's a couple things you said in there. I've always had my own personal belief that you're almost one of two things. You either have friendships that are an inch wide and a mile deep. So in other words, very, you know, a small group that's very deep, or you have, I love that you said that because I've never heard someone else say it before, but a mile wide and an inch deep. You know, you got a million friends, but none of them are close. And I always think about, I keep hearing this lately. I don't know why, it's very morbid, but, you know, the average hospital bed has room for 6 people around it. The average casket has room for 6 people to carry it. Who are those people? You know, and that's a difficult question. It's morbid, but think about that for a minute. Like you said, you know, cancer diagnosis, whatever it might be. Take a pause for a minute and say, do I have 6 people in my life that will show up to my hospital and be around my bed and be my village when I'm going through it, whatever it may be, right? Just very powerful. And there's something else that I read with the book in regards to, I think we're more connected than we've ever been and we're lonelier than we've ever been. Is that true?
Yeah. You know, 61% of Americans now admit that they are lonely.
Right.
And that's a big deal because in America, remember, we've been fed this line of individuality and autonomy. To admit that you're lonely feels like a personal failure. I am not able to make friends. I am a failure because I can't make friends. So a lot of people, and psychologists have studied this for years, in America, a lot of people have a lot of shame around loneliness. They don't want to admit that they're lonely. So if you've got 61% of Americans admitting that they're lonely, boy, that tells me the number's probably closer to 80 or 90% of Americans that are lonely.
Right.
And so I think there has to come a point where we say, like, hey, our system of life is not working. You know, watch TV for 6 hours, spend 5 of them glued to my phone, have 1,000 friends on my social and no one I can call when I'm hurting, post my deepest issues on Instagram, but not be able to talk to them in the quietness of my own home with my closest friends, right? Like our whole system's not working.
Right.
And so I think it's a time, and that's what the book is about, is like, don't we think it's time to consider a different way?
Right. Yeah. And you know, social media, which could probably be a whole podcast in itself. To your point, we know that my neighbor got married or, you know, so-and-so had a birthday and so you go places and you almost don't even have anything to talk about because you already saw it on social media. And I hate that. Like, you know what I mean? Hate that. Like, you can't ask questions like, hey man, I didn't see you last weekend. Where were you? Oh, my daughter got married. Oh, really? And now you have a conversation versus you go and go, hey, I saw on Facebook your daughter got married. now it's over. Like there's no, you know what I mean? Sure. You can tell me about it, but it's not real. And I think it's robbed us of true conversation. That's why I love this podcast. Honestly, like you and I are having a conversation right now that, you know what I mean? I love this entire platform. If nobody listens, I gain something every time from conversations like this.
Yeah. And you know, undocumented conversations are the lifeblood of relationship. And I think we have, everything is posted, everything is retweeted, everything is Instagrammed. And so like the moments that, you know, hey, if I'm going to open up and share about my brother and some of the hurt and some of the challenges, and can we pray for him? Like, those are the moments that we're losing. And those are the moments that knit hearts closer and closer and closer together, because, everything's getting shared.
Right.
And so it's like, so, you know, I'm all for being transparent, but I think that there's moments that should stay between friends.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, we, as a culture, we don't know how to do that so well.
And I think some people, and I agree with you on that, but I also think there's a lot of people that just post highlight reels.
Of course.
They don't, they're not posting, they're not being transparent. And so when somebody is transparent, you're like, oh, wow. You know, you're almost drawn to it, because most people, it's just their highlight reel. You know, and now it's filtered and everything else.
And it's like, edited and everything else. Yeah, of course.
It's not real, you know. I'd rather see real. I really would. And I hope we can somehow gain that back. How do we get it back?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think we follow principle one, which is this idea. The first biblical principle in the book I talk about is this idea of proximity, that proximity provides opportunity, that we have to understand the power of just showing up.
Right.
That when you show up for a small group, when you show up for a conversation over coffee, when you show up to worship Jesus, the gathering provides an opportunity for God to do things that he will not and does not do otherwise. And so valuing and actually prioritizing getting close to others in a physical environment is really principle one of community. And it sounds so simple, and yet most of us have scheduled it out of our lives. You know, in the book, I share the story of a woman named Pia Farenkoff, who she died a number of years ago. And when she was discovered, she had died in her garage in her car. And a repairman who was coming to her house found her body. And when the medical examiners got there, they realized that she hadn't died the day before or the week before. Pia Farenkoff had died almost 5 years, 1,817 days before they found her.
Oh my gosh.
She had 9 siblings, and for almost 5 years, no one in her life, she was 44, no one in her life ever called, ever checked on her, ever knew, and she lived in a neighborhood. Her neighbor was cutting her grass, and for 5 years, no one cared.
Wow.
And that's the type of world that we're living in. It's an extreme example, but it's an example that I think resonates because it's so unbelievable. But we have isolated ourselves in such a large degree that, hey, my bills are paid online. My, you know, food is delivered on a, you know, in a Uber Eats. My everything's automated, that I don't see people.
Right.
And in that way, we've lost something.
Wow, man, this has been fantastic. I can't wait. I can't wait to read the book myself, because I think I just, this resonates with, I think, anyone listening. It has to. Mm-hmm. And if not, we probably should press pause and just think about it for a minute, because I bet it does resonate with you. You just don't realize it. I think we all know it. And it's almost like one of those things where we all know it. We just don't want to talk about it. Like we're just ignoring what's happening. And we need each other more now more than ever before. I just believe that. I really do. Like we need each other.
I agree. And I think we also were at a pretty interesting moment in time post-COVID, because the landscape has been shuffled. Relationships have changed, right? We've all lost some friends, maybe gained some friends, but we're sort of at this moment where the cement is wet, and we can ask ourselves, what do I want community to look like in my life? You know, and I think we're at a moment where we can step into possibly some new habits, some new ways of living. And so it's an exciting time too.
Can this be used as a workbook for a small group?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So actually our church right now, all across our 9 locations, we have over 200 small groups going through this material. And that's where the rubber meets the road. I mean, we teach it on Sundays, and that's fine. But ultimately, it gets flushed out in that small group. So at thesacredus.com, there's a free small group guide that you can download that kind of walks you through 9 different gatherings that help you understand these 7 principles. And then how do I apply them? How do I practice them? How do I take next steps in them? And they're challenging. I mean, a couple months ago, I recorded the audiobook and I wrote the book, and I was like really convicted about, 2 in particular of the principles that I was like, I need to focus on those because I'm not leaning in right now. And so I do think they kind of transcend. Nobody arrives. It's not like, hey, I live these perfectly. No way. We're in process.
I love it. And actually I'm talking to some guys now that have wanted to do a kind of tight knit small group. So this may be it for us, because I may be the guy that you mentioned that streams and listens to Elevation in my car. So
hey, nothing wrong with that, right? Thank God for it, right? I'm grateful for the resource. Absolutely. But maybe there's more, right? And that's what I think we often, if it's an enhancement, that's great. If it's a supplement, then we end up isolating,
All right. You mentioned the website. Can you mention it again? Where do they find this, the website?
Yeah. Thesacredus.com. Everything on there is free. And that's where, you can get, there's videos, there's a small group guide, anything that just helps people engage with community. We tried to load it up on there. And then voxchurch.org, V-O-X, voxchurch.org. There's a number of teachings about the material in the book. And in the teachings, I try to go beyond the material in the book and sort of give another layer, another flavor to it. But again, the goal with all of this is just to challenge people to take that step. That's the second principle in biblical community, is that vulnerability creates connection. That until we really start to step out into vulnerability, we can't build those deep bridges and really connect. So it's going to take vulnerability, and I try to outline a path to get there.
Any small group I've ever been in, I always call it the gift of giving second. I've mentioned it many times on this podcast. It's the gift of going second. And when one person steps out and says, I'm dealing with this, I'm going through this, it is amazing. It is magical what you see happen in that circle or that room or that living room or around a table. It instantly changes the climate of the room in the best way possible, because somebody can now go second and say, me too, but you got to get there as a group. You can't just do it the first time. Maybe you do. I don't know. But I think you got to get there as a group. You got to really get that foundation as a group where there's trust, where I'm going to put myself out here. And I know that you aren't going to reject me or make me feel worse. But there's so much magic that happens in those kind of groups.
So good. Oh, that's so good. Yeah. We, in the book, I talk about this idea that, nobody likes to go first. It's so funny that you say that. And I think the way that I've always, it's helped me, go first in the moments that I have to be honest about something and confess it, is to remind myself and teach myself that I'm actually going second.
Right.
Because Jesus already went first.
Exactly.
Right. He hung naked on the cross. He was vulnerable and fully exposed. He was ashamed and ridiculed and embraced those awkward, challenging, shameful moments so that I could have the confidence to step in and be honest with others as well. And so, the more we learn that, like, hey, God's become vulnerable for us. And if that's truly real, then somebody can step forward and go first, but technically second, right? Go second. In sharing and open up the door. Yeah. But it always does take that pioneer.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, this has been wonderful. Where can they buy the book?
Yeah. Anywhere books are sold, right? So, Barnes & Noble, Amazon are the probably easiest places. I think there's a link to it on thesacredus.com as well. But yeah, wherever you buy books, this book should be there. So you can get it most places. And I hope it's an encouragement to people.
I do too. And I think it will be. I hope anyone listening today has found that. I like to run through the links a few times in case somebody's driving or on a treadmill or walking. Yeah. Can we run through them one more time?
Yeah, sure. Thesacredus.com is where you can get some free resources. And then VoxChurch, VOXChurch.org. Is where you can get some sermon content on this topic. And then, of course, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, anywhere you like to buy books, that's where you can purchase the book itself.
Awesome. Man, thank you. Thank you for your time. Thank you for the book. Thank you for your heart for this. And hopefully, you know, it helps others. Let's get back in community again. We gotta be together.
Yes and amen.
Appreciate you, brother. Talk soon. Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Unscripted Podcast with your host, Aaron Conrad. Make sure to like, share, follow, and review on your favorite podcast platforms. Also, make sure to check out my song, Great and Mighty One, on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you find your music. We'll see you next time on Unscripted with Aaron Conrad.